Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jules Gill, vending mouth.
Is this my new nickname? Or are you talking about the amazing new reveal for the Kirby game?
Yeah.
Vending mouth for the win.
Vending mouth, scissor lift mouth. I know I opened the main podcast this week with the same thing, but I just love Kirby that damn much. And I know you've actually seen the gameplay for it, where and not to harp on about it too much, but I love the fact that in trying to think of a new game mechanic for Kirby, they were just like, what if he ate a car? What if he ate crazy, stupid, big stuff?
Like, Kirby to me will always be one of those fascinating characters where, like, the creator just believes that he is the hardest nut alive. He's like, oh, there's nothing that Kirby can't do. He's the next, like, Captain Marvel. He's just going to go around just smashing
people.
But only because you write him to be like that. We still know what he looks like. It's just the idea and the delivery package is so at odds with each other that I always just find it just mad.
Because it's Masahiro Sakurai, who has gone on to obviously be more kind of more associated with Smash Brothers, but still, it is that whole thing where, you know, like you said, like, he thinks that Kirby's the most important, powerful individual in the world. He's the only person.
He's the bloody Poochie of the group.
Kirby's the best. What do you mean? But like, no, he's the only character who survives the apocalypse at the start of Smash Brothers.
I know. Come on,
it's damn hard. But at the same time, that's the thing with this new reveal, because they're like, obviously the internet. I remember Polygon's Brian David Gilbert tried to break down the lore of Kirby, like the L-O-R-E, and also the L-A-W of Kirby, in as much as, you know, what actually happens when he eats something? Is it a black hole? Like, what is it? And all these, trying to find all these different interview snippets from Sakurai as to, like, what is Kirby? And now he's, like, swallowing cars, but it doesn't actually go away, and so there is a limit to what he can ingest.
Well, that's the interesting thing, is that it seems that if he eats enemies whole and he kills them, he absorbs part of their powers. So that is fantastic for them.
But it, when it comes to, like, lives,
but when it comes to inorganic matter, it seems that he only has to get his gob like partway over it to take over that thing.
He's like
a
snake.
Which is terrifying, right? Because in theory, that means that if he went and just basically had a quick slurp on the top of your head, right? like a toad's cap, he could potentially possess your body.
Like a Metroid, that way, he's just sort of clipped on.
Yeah, like that. He's literally, oh, mate, that's the plot twist. When it comes down to it, it turns out that it's set like a million years after.
Oh, and he's the original
Metroid. He's the ultimate form of the X parasite.
I would take that, to be fair. The thing is, when he's noshing the car, I thought
he's driving
it with his tongue, because I was like, well, you get his tongue
in there. It's going through the
sunroof. Yeah, just through the side, like. I can buy that. Like, if you're going to logistically tell me that Kirby can drive a car with his tongue, fine. I don't think he can operate a vending machine with it. And I don't think he can get this up the scissor lift, but I can buy that he can drive a car with it.
Do you know what? I think it's a very poor taste, actually, that they make him a vending machine and have him cough out soda cans in this day and age with all the plagues that are going on in this world. Mate, come on, mate. Come on.
It's true. You're not wrong.
Tone deaf.
Overall, though, I should say that this is the Untitled Panda Podcast, as is very much apparent. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
And this week we had one of the best Nintendo Directs there's been in a little while. Nintendo always seem to know WTF they're doing, and they dropped a new Mario Strikers game alongside some Kirby stuff.
Right, sorry.
All sorts of things.
How dare you just dismissively say that?
I was thinking of you when I saw that.
We're just going to do a little Mario Strikers game. The amount of tables that I knocked over standing up after that is a ridiculous, man, because I looked at that Nintendo Direct, and as like a relatively new Switch owner, I was a bit like, oh, you know, like, oh, it's quite nice dipping my toe in here and there. But I didn't expect Nintendo to just go straight up to me and plant a full-on smackaroo straight on my lips, leaving that little like snail trail of spit between them. And he just takes my wallet out and just says, I'll be keeping this then. Because I wanted to buy everything that was on there. Advance Wars. Klonoa is
I did a weird noise when I saw Klonoa. I've not, that's as Obi-Wan, that's not a name. I've heard in 20 years. I've not played that since, 2002? Like, it was a while ago.
I'm just imagining you as old Ben Kenobi, just like, that's not a name I've heard of in many a year.
In 20 years. But it's, yeah, I mean, yeah, Klonoa. I mean, this is the year that kangaroo's coming back as well. That is
No one's playing it, so Cow the Kangaroo. Crash Bandicoot ripoff.
Yeah, but that's the thing. So, like, I mean, but that is also the thing, is that I love that genre. Like, if they're going to bring all these games back and everything, then I'm going to be all over it. Klonoa, I remember being a big deal, but it was in, like, 2002. It's sort of, that's kind of in the same realm as, like, Gex, where it's like, ah, it's cool. It was of its time.
It feels like the WWE would call it a transitional champion, where basically you've got, like, the big hitters that came before, like your Marios and stuff, and then you've got, like, the crashes that came after it. And in between them, there was a lot of, like, pretenders to the throne that were just kind of like, oh, we'll keep the seat warm for you until somebody else comes back. Like, Gex is a fantastic shout, by the way, of a representation of that.
That's like the Tombi is another one. Tombi is a massive shout.
Blinks the Time Sweeper. Voodoo Vince.
You know, I never played Blinks the Time Sweeper, but they did add that to the Xbox backwards compat, and I was like, I might finally play in 2022 Blinks the Time. Who needs Sifu when you've got Blinks the Time Sweeper?
I'd give the first one a pass. If they put the sequel on there, that one's all right, actually.
Okay. At some point, I'll catch it. Voodoo Vince I've not touched either, but I know that's a big deal. There's many legacy characters, but anyway, overall, let me bring this back on track. This is the Untitled Battle Podcast, where we ask people what they'd like us to talk about, and all sorts of different questions, all sorts of different talking points and thoughts on whatever gets sent our way. Now, for the main podcast this week, the one that me and Ben Roy and Josh do, and we did that on Grand Theft Auto 6, so we asked people for their questions and thoughts on that as well. So go check out that podcast to hear me, Josh, and Ben Roy break down way more of the questions that came in. But I think some people thought that it was for this podcast, because we usually ask for questions, which is totally fair. So I brought some across to this this podcast as well. Overall, though, we got such a massive response last week that I wanted to carry some stuff over. So we've got a nice menagerie of all sorts of different things from last week, and then, you know, whatever else will shake out in good time. So first question from Zach, who says, what do you think is the worst game mechanic, and why is it if the main character of an RPG dies, it's an automatic team wipe? Tried to get into Final Fantasy IX, but when I had to turn back to my last save and Zidane went down, it immediately turned me off the whole game. I mean, this is why I haven't finished Persona 4 yet, because my main lad can't stand up.
Zach, baby, speak to me, because that is right where I live right there. I absolutely detest it, because it's like, oh no, the Spy-Yed antagonist is down, therefore we cannot possibly carry on without them.
Can't revive them.
Especially when it's like you are your teammates, you've been controlling them through the turn-based combat system as well. You're just like, come on, man, like, who cares? He's just taking a wee nappy, he's fine.
Yeah, and it's like, obviously loads of those games have revive mechanics. Like, I mean, it's like we're not reviving the rest of the party all the time. Dragon Quest has that too. Dragon Quest 12 still has that thing where if your main dude goes down, you're just completely knackered. But Persona, it stands out more in Persona to me.
I tell you what, my least favorite mechanic was one that an entire game was built around, and that's the parkour system from Brink.
The first person shooter thing.
Because basically it's the entire like level design was designed around using parkour to get like the edge on your enemy by going above them, or like sliding around, or like using the walls to jump off and stuff like that. And it was all great on paper, apart from somebody didn't actually tell you that you could only use the parkour like free running abilities with certain classes, meaning that if you were playing it as like a heavy or a shooter or a sniper or anything like that, then you were locked out of half of the game's best mechanic. So I feel like any game that doesn't implement its mechanic that it is selling, using as a selling point properly, is a big no-no for me.
I'm trying to think of, like, because overall, like, my pet peeve with all games is checkpoints. It's just, if there's ever
man,
anything...
I just did a These Things Suck on checkpoints as
I was going to say, like, you know, you play something like Sifu, the way that game's death mechanic works is that you are going to be going through a game over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But I think it's that thing where if you go back, it feels like just losing time. Like, if something persists, it's fine. But it's like, you can argue it's part of the overall game.
Yeah,
if I've just lost parts of my life that I'm just like, what am I doing? And I'll, that's the thing that makes me bounce off a game fastest. If I'm going back 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever. I don't know if I ever told this story on here. I think I did. But Max Payne 2, when that game first came out, I did about 3/4 of that game and then I died and I had to go right back to the very beginning because that game doesn't have any autosaves at all.
Yeah, it's horrible. Rough, isn't it? Well, it's like Dead Rising, if you ever played that? Where it's because obviously you're like trying to save all the survivors, you're trying to go around them all and you've got to do it within certain time things. And the only way you can save that game is by going to the restroom. It's like it is a nightmare when you get to a difficult point or you're trying to do an all survivors like survive run and it's just like one guy dies. It's like, oh cool, let me just check my watch here. Oh, it's literally 50 minutes since my last save, so guess I'm going away really
badly. The thing that sort of stuff reminds me of, like when I was living at home and you've got like your tea's ready, your food's ready, and you're just trying to do that, you're trying to walk away from the screen, but you need to save, which is one of the best things about modern gaming, is that you can nearly always just put something to sleep and it'll be fine and pick it up later. But those days where you just need to save, and in Dead Rising's case, it's a rigmarole to be able to actually bank something.
One of the checkpoint things that I mentioned under these things, so, which you should definitely check out, by the way, on the What Culture Gaming YouTube channel, is the World at War, when you're playing on veteran difficulty and all of the AI just spamming grenades. So you could actually get a checkpoint that literally loads you in just when a grenade has landed at your feet, and it will keep doing it if you're really unlucky.
I remember Resident Evil 4 having that, the original one on the GameCube. I think they tweaked it as it went on, but it was like every time you opened a door in the original RE4, it would save. So if you were open a door,
so if you're into something,
someone with a pitchfork's right there, it's like you just load and get stabbed, load and get stabbed over and over again. Next question from Liam Guest. Now, last week, maybe it was the week before, I brought a lot of questions in. I asked people for their predictions for the rest of the year or for the generation overall, because the new console cycle is kicking in.
Yes,
this is an overall prediction from Liam Guest, who says, prediction for the future, Peter Molyneux launches Mollyview, a new form of streaming, gaming, and digital media direct into your brain. Your every waking move in action, in-game. You can even be the MC of any movie or show. What do you think Peter Molyneux is going to do next? We know he's doing NFT farming game thing.
Oh man, he's doing he's wherever good money's to be found. If somebody told him that fracking was coming back in style, he'd be right down there, little hard hat on, he'd be down there.
Mollyview.
Molly, right, I'm not gonna lie, that has popped me huge. Mollyview has just, oh, it's good times.
Peter Mollyview. So,
but the problem is that if it was made by Peter Molyneux,
it would Lord never come
rest,
out for
Lord rest his bones. I feel like it wouldn't work at all. So it would basically be like, it would sell you on the idea of like, what is that film where everyone becomes, it's becoming John Malkovich, where it's like that thing of where they inhabit the body. You wouldn't actually inhabit Peter Molyneux's real body for a bit.
Right.
And it's just him like doing paperwork, signing shady deals, basically doing snake oil sales and stuff.
He could maybe redeem his entire being if he made Peter Molyneux Simulator, where you just have to come up with the most BS idea over and over again.
He's literally just got to meme himself at this point. Like, if he owns the meme, then he will literally just make millions. He'll be the new, Papa John. With less racism, hopefully.
I was going to say, with less problematic and intent. But I think that for the sake of this guy, Peter Molyneux feels like someone who we are very synonymous with. We grew up with a lot of his lies. A lot of people associate him with Fable and everything else. But he's been largely off the radar. It's just that he popped back up again when the NFT conversation happened, because he's making like seven figures on this NFT thing. But I don't think it's real money. I think he's making like Ethereum or something like that.
Yeah, no.
It's all in this thing.
Like, he's waiting until you can sell all your properties and stuff like that. You can create it in this fake currency that he's got. But then as soon as it goes live, that currency will enter into some sort of crypto currency stock market and then potentially be worth something. But at the moment, it's all theoretical.
Yeah, like, I think
I could right now just say that you and I, Scott, have a micro economy of ourselves. And I'm trading in Scott Bucks. I almost said Scott Butts, which maybe should be the currency.
The same amount.
Yeah, exactly. And they just do a little fart in your mouth. But they're still worth a million real life pounds, according to the currency exchange.
As long as you're having fun, it's fine. But I think, this thing, Peter Molyneux, for me, for both of us, I think, just epitomizes the grift, getting in there, making the most out of something, and cashing out. So, I don't know, Peter Molyneux for the rest of this generation, I live in fear for what that man's going to come up with next. So next question is one that I brought across from the initial batch of Grand Theft Auto questions, because GTA 6 got confirmed as being officially in development this week.
Oh, yes, of course.
But obviously we knew about that for the last couple of years anyway. But, Rockstar saying that it's happening officially got a lot of people freaking out, and Rockstar's stock price skyrocketed or something. So I don't know who didn't know that this was coming, to be honest. But
yeah, like, a bit weird, you know, that, isn't it?
But it does well. Anyway, question from Tom, who says, "What's up, Egg Daddy and Talkie Boy? I'm sad to say that I think the next GTA will end up being way more of an online service game and way less of a single-player experience. I think the money that GTA Online has made them has made it impossible for Rockstar to not go in that direction." Thoughts?
So I agree with you long term, but short term I disagree, because I believe that Rockstar uses the money created by these projects in order to fuel these ridiculous epic odysseys that are single player focused experiences. I mean, the huge rampant success of GTA 5 effectively allowed us a gateway into Red Dead Redemption 2's outstanding story. Now, yes, there were some very problematic studio development crunch times and stuff they had to work around, but the story that came out of it was utterly breathtaking, and it would have been allowed to be so if they didn't have a constant supply of revenue allowing that game to be propped up. So I feel that going forward, GTA 6 will have probably an impeccable, really well thought out, hopefully, fingers crossed, that they'll actually take on board the multiple character perspective thing and maybe turn it into a co-op game campaign, which could be amazing. They will probably allow that, and that'll be amazing, but then it will definitely shift into the online portion, which is where the money is going to be made, and we probably won't see a single player DLC, because we haven't seen a single player DLC technically.
Yeah, there's
GTA 5
thing.
We have the contract with Dr. Dre and stuff like that, like, but you still had to have online to do it, so it doesn't really count. So I'd say the days of single player DLC are over.
Yeah, I think the thing that I'm super curious about is just what, I mean, I said this in the other podcast too, but I'm super curious what a GTA is without Dan Houser. Like, the reason that you had Red Dead Redemption 2 being so opulent and creatively focused was entirely, or I like to think entirely, because of him. Like, he's been the spearhead of that stuff for over 20 years, like entire Rockstar history, and now he's left to form his own studio. So this will be the first mainline GTA without him, and I kind of wonder whether that does mean they give in to the more money-hungry stuff, that the Take-Two, the publisher stuff, or whether, you know, he's trained enough people or enough people have been around him in the different story groups over the years to be able to do a Grand Theft Auto that still feels like a Grand Theft Auto, and yeah, just how that stuff sort of shakes out. But that's a really good point, though. They need, one of them funds the other, and they, like, it's almost, you could argue, people wouldn't care about GTA Online releasing in 2013 if it didn't have the previous decade plus of positive stories, immersion, everything else beforehand. Yeah, it's curious. I think GTA Online will be the thing that outlasts us all, and I think that's the thing that will ultimately become what GTA is, quote unquote. I still hope we get a decent single player thing at some point.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Point. The only thing that I do worry about is that we might end up with maybe GTA as a live service style thing, where, you know how Street Fighter V dropped without a story mode. It was literally just the bare bones, this is the fighting game engine, and you can have a few characters to play around with. I worry that GTA 6 is going to take a similar opportunity, and maybe, and I really hope that this isn't going to be the case, piecemeal out their single player story mode so right. that it is like, oh, play through the first chapter. And then the second chapter will come out after a huge amount of online play. And it won't have a natural conclusion. You'll be basically playing through a singular story player.
Well, that's the
thing experience.
That Strauss Zelnick, who's the publisher Take-Two, Strauss Zelnick, cited the contract as a thing to look at in terms of how they want to do this stuff going mm-hmm. forward. So I wonder if they do something like the contract every few months or something like that. And they do literally end up doing what is quote unquote a single player or immersive story told over months and months, because it also has the online component.
But very weird.
We'll see how that stuff comes together. Next question from Megan Roxborough, who says, using these two examples, which games do you erase from your memory? One, so you can experience it again for the first time, and two, you wish you'd never played it.
Ooh, that is a really tough question. Like, which game have I absolutely been in love with? I mean,
I guess which one would you want to like reintroduce to your brain again?
I had one of the best times playing video games in recent memory, playing through God of War 2018.
I was just going to say recently, God of War.
Well, I recently got to go and experience it again secondhand because my friend Kai, he's just gone through and he's played from start to finish, and he's really done well in trying to avoid the spoilers. I think he knew the gist of what the story was, but he'd basically been living under a rock for the last couple of years.
Just not in there.
yeah, exactly. So like, he managed to avoid all of that. And then was texting me, just being like, oh my God, this bit. Oh man, I can't believe this just happened. Oh, I'm here. Like, blah, blah, blah. Does it get weirder here? And I'm like, oh,
that's
man.
The nearest
like,
thing.
This
you
is
get.
Lovely to like experience this again.
I love that energy. Like, that's the nearest thing you can get to actually being able to re-experience something, is that the whole vicarious thing of someone else going through it again. I would say God of War again, because I think I would love to re-experience it the way that I did in 2018, where it was like not zero expectations. It was still God of War, but the state the IP was in, like God of War Ascension was pretty terrible. It was very much forgettable. Even the original trilogy, I thought God of War 3 was pretty bad in terms of just being, he's just a giant rage emoji, just killing everything left, right, and center. I had no like for Kratos left.
Yeah.
And then 2018's one was like, oh my God, you've matured the character. You've recontextualized everything. And it's just so well done. It's so maturely done. We can both say God of War for the experience again for the first time. What would
it would either be that or maybe the Telltale's The Walking Dead season one, because I really loved that experience.
Ooh,
I had a really good time with that.
I'll switch mine too. I'll go with Breath of the Wild. I'll go with the first time I went through Breath of the Wild, because that was just drinking that game in. It was very much tied with getting the Switch for the first time, but I think going through that thing for the first time was just felt so just peaceful and tranquil and rewarding and gorgeous. Something that you wish you'd never played, that you would get rid of.
Oh, there are many games that I wish I'd never played. It's actually quite hard to pin down which one in particular would get my laser-focused ire.
I would get rid of Anthem so that I never have to think what BioWare became.
Oh, that's a deep cut, that is.
Or Mass Effect Andromeda. I don't know, actually.
Mass Effect Andromeda, it was really bad. I know that you like the combat. I hated everything. I probably would actually try and erase that.
You wish you never touched Mass Effect Andromeda. To be fair,
maybe,
it's not that much.
Maybe one
salvaging.
Of the Call of Duty games. I remember having a really bad time with
Ghost
one of them.
Is pretty bad. Like,
yeah, maybe it was Ghost.
That
the
was
dog.
The first 2013 one.
I think
the Deal of the Dog, they did all the dog mocap. That was for Ghosts.
I think I was basically just not like, nah, this is where I'm tapping out the series for a long old while. It's going to take me a lot to get back into it.
Yeah, that's where it feels like they're at right now. Like Black Ops Cold War was kind of meh, and then Vanguard was kind of meh. And it's just like Modern Warfare 2 is meant to be getting announced this afternoon. So I guess maybe when this goes live, it'll be a thing. But that's apparently about to be mentioned. But yeah, like Jules said, we've played a lot of bad games. There's not that much that's recently gone, what the hell am I doing? Maybe the Avengers. I would just wipe that out of my life. But next question from You're Done Messed Up Aaron, who says, with all the talks of remakes, remasters, and retro reimaginings, why haven't we seen a new Twisted Metal? Seems like it could be easily done with lots of new modes like Rocket League. Thoughts? Well, this is coming. I don't know if dude hasn't seen, but they're doing a Twisted Metal TV show. So the assumption is that they'll do a
Twisted
Metal game.
They'll probably have a video game
alongside, Because I don't know about you, but I've not played Twisted Metal since I was a kid, but I used to love Twisted Metal 2.
Was the last one I played Twisted Metal Black?
Black
maybe?
Was the PS3 one?
The one I played. And then for some reason, I just remember it being overshadowed because I, for some reason, after playing that, got really into the whole sort of vehicular combat arena style thing and got Vigilante 8. And then I got the WWF
Crush Hour.
Yeah, and then I was like, mate, Crush Hour is banging. Like, it's so fun.
I don't, like, my general thoughts on vehicular combat is that there's nowhere near enough of it. That was why I dove into Destruction All-Stars. That game's terrible, but I love the idea of, you know, vehicle
concept
and character combo.
Brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, if you did a new Twisted Metal with, like, Wreckfest's physics or something, mm-hmm. and make it about, you know, car deformation models and just sideswiping dudes and explosions and stuff, that could be really, really cool. I think that it's been a long time since there's been a really good vehicular combat game.
Like, I mean, you could literally go back to what, 1990, I want to say it's either 1994 or 1996, and then do Destruction Derby in the bowl, that one mode where you just got just survive. All you gotta do is just survive. That was the best time ever as a kid.
Absolutely, genuinely, that's what Wreckfest is. Like playing Wreckfest now gave me, genuinely, like one-to-one, I was like, oh, this is what I've been waiting for like 20 years. Wreckfest is so good in that regard. It's brilliant. Next question from Nard Dog, who says, hey, lads, what do you think will be a new revolutionary game mechanic that comes into gaming? Do you think we'll have something to do with a set of controls for a new genre of games, or do you think it'll have to do with system capabilities and how it affects the way games are made?
It's so hard to try and pinpoint where gaming's going after what we've seen. I mean, the fact that Sony are doubling down on the VR technology hopefully means that we'll be seeing more and more immersive titles that really do capture your sort of every single motion. But I really liked an idea that they scrapped from, I believe it was from from Alien Isolation, where the game was meant to read your heartbeat, or they had a heartbeat monitor. And like,
that,
if it raises too high, then the xenomorph will find you quicker because of the fact that it's like hunting you down.
What about
I may be getting
this
wrong, by the way. If it's a different game, then please let me know about this.
What about for those of us who are just really unfit? Like, I'll start the game and it'll be like, he's freaking out. It's right behind. No, I'm just my resting heart rate.
But I just think that with the biometric scanner stuff that you've got with the inside the new DualShock controller, maybe they could work that into something.
Cool. I think for me, I want studios, I want game devs to double down on the SSD stuff. I know that's more specific to PS5, but it's not that the Series X doesn't have a version of an SSD as well. It's just that it's celebrated more on the PlayStation side. But loads of game devs are already talking about how removing loading altogether frees up all sorts of level design and things like that. And obviously Ratchet and Clank was a nice early example of that, where you have a gun that can fire entire parts of the environment at people, like big chunks of stuff, because it can load it all instantly. And I want that stuff. Every time now when I play a game where you've got to, sidle through something or
God of War has that, a lot of that, doesn't it? Like going through those little loading sections of like, oh, I must go under a cave now. It's like, I'll accept it a few times. Every single time you do it, you're just like, I just am aware that this is a loading screen.
That's the thing. And it's like, I want to be able to do more, maybe a character goes from indoors to outdoors straight away. Everything is nice and smooth and seamless. I need the creative, I need the devs to think of ways to maximize non-loading. But I feel like that's going to be the thing where we look at these new versions and we'll go, oh my God, we have to put up with screens before this or whatever it is. I also think VR will be a big deal. I wonder if VR can actually escape its gimmicky kind of feel, but good VR is brilliant. So I wonder if that can be done better. Like maybe you can aim two places at once or something like that. I would look forward to stuff like that. Next question from Hugo Brandao, who says, good afternoon from Portugal. Well, good afternoon yourself.
Hello, mate.
Do you guys think that in a parallel universe where Sony bought Activision, the games will be exclusive and or be on PlayStation Now? Would all the exclusivity conversations happen at all? Best regards, keep up the good work.
Do you trust Sony
more than Microsoft? For me, I remember thinking this when the deal went down, the idea that if Sony had snapped this up, I would personally be more worried. I think that Sony have a history of being very hubristic and very, they pay for so many exclusivity deals anyway. They're always paying for all sorts of DLC stuff. So I think they would put the walls up immediately and be like, no, you come to us. We are not PlayStation. 100%. We own everything. Yeah, I would be. I would think that would be worse.
Well, they don't have like a streaming service in the same vein as Game Pass. So they've got no reason to, you say, have the long-term goal of getting Game Pass itself on other consoles and other mediums in order to market games that way. For Sony, it's just kind of like, we are keeping all of the best stuff here, because they would see it basically as, if you're converted to a PlayStation, then you may remain a Sony PlayStation fan for your entire life and just buy out of... honoring the brand, I guess.
I do wonder as well, because obviously there's all the conversations, some of them coming from Phil Spencer, just saying that, look, we want competition. He was the one saying that he says that PlayStation is an important part of the industry. He's always sticking up for E3 being there and stuff like that. So I wonder if you gave all this power to Sony, if they would just do a big cackling laugh and then push everyone else out the way and be like, we are gaming now, and like, you have to come to us. Whereas like, there's a human side to Phil Spencer. There seems to be at the minute anyway.
That is just, he likes the fact that it's a gaming industry. It's not a gaming monopoly. So I kind of, but I just,
but it's easy to say how confident you are in your competitors when you are the one buying all of these massive companies. Yeah. Like, it's very easy to be the victor saying, oh yes, you tried very hard there. And we should give credit to the second place.
Like, that's the thing. It's going to be so interesting going forward, how they are literally holding all the cards. And it's, if something doesn't go their way, they just go, well, we'll take Call of Duty off you then for a bit until you play ball again. Right. You can have it back, but you've got to do what we say. And just like, stop hitting yourself. I'm kind of,
well, somebody pointed out something interesting, which was like, what's to stop Microsoft demanding that the titles they give to other platforms aren't charged at a higher rate?
Nothing.
Like there's literally nothing for them. Like, we accept now that games are like, I mean, games were like 40 quid, then they came to 70 quid now, and that's like what we're apparently expected and prepared to pay. Mm-hmm. What's to stop Microsoft just going like, look, you can have Call of Duty on there, but you're gonna have to pay us a tax, and you're gonna put that tax probably forward onto the player, and now suddenly that's a 75 quid game, that's an 80 quid game, you're making it more expensive, and I'm actually therefore drawing more people towards me, even where we don't have exclusivity. I'm offering a more of value for my brand.
Yeah, that's the next wrinkle of the conversation around exclusivity, because like, for me, I just personally, I don't trust that they won't make it exclusive in the long run. I know that they're out there saying that. They said that again this week. I just don't believe them. Big old long nose from Phil Spencer. Because I just think they've spent so much money that they'll have to do something with it. But that's a really good point that you said. I wonder if, not price gouging, but I wonder if they just leave it full price on the other platforms. They talked about bringing it to Switch this week as well. So Call of Duty on Switch. Obviously, Nintendo's going to want a big cut of that. They love a good full price game. So whatever.
Nintendo sell 5 quid off.
It's like 70% off games from 10 years ago that nobody actually bothered about. But yeah, I think that that's the next wrinkle of that stuff. And they'll keep it full price on the other platforms. And then they'll probably advertise within those versions. Like, hey, by the way, it's on Game Pass and you'd get it as part of your monthly subscription and push people, you know, that way. So I guess, yeah, we'll see how stuff shakes out in time. Next question from Andy Taylor. Hey, guys, I love the podcast and I hope you're both doing well. Which game out of Elden Ring and Horizon are you both looking forward to the most? Can't wait for these games. I was going to read out the emoji description. Grinning face with smiling eyes.
Well, I'm making a grinning face with smiling eyes because of the fact that I am an Elden Ring fanboy already. I know that I'm going to get it. Like, I'm looking forward to it the most because A, I don't have a PlayStation 5, so I can't really look forward to Horizon Zero Dawn. But at the same time, I've been waiting a long time for Elden Ring and I'm super hyped about it.
I'm very curious on, because I'm playing through Sifu at the minute, and I don't know if I have the stomach for another entry in the abuse genre, because I'm just, it's starting to become a thing. Like, Sekiro almost took it out of me. Returnal almost made me just crawl up into a ball, and I got through those games eventually. Sifu is now currently being the thing that I'm like, oh my God, can I ever actually get through this?
I'm about to get it. Like, today I'm
really,
going
really
to
should.
Get it.
Like, the thing is, it's so recommendable. It's brilliant. I love that game so much, but oh my God, does it make me into a fine paste? Like, there's the boss battles are ridiculous, and there's a lot of learning to do in that game before you're going to.
Is there any like tutorials or anything like that to begin with?
There is.
Or
does it
just chuck you straight in the deep and like,
no,
go for it?
No, it's actually really good about that stuff because the opening sequence is brilliant. The tutorial is great. You can also go into an AI sparring thing and just spar for as long as you want.
Ah, that's quite cool.
Which is nice. You can tell the AI to be passive and let you practice moves, or just fight you forever and just learn that way. So no, they do give you enough chances to learn everything. Unlike what I imagine will happen in Elden Ring, where I think we'll probably just get flattened by a dragon and then
you'll open the door. Better. The loading screen will happen, which is obviously a pet peeve, and then all of a sudden there'll be the little villager from Resident Evil 4 on the other side of the pitchfork.
Since Benroy pointed that out, he was like, I hate how many men with sticks there are these days. And ever since he said that, he's so right. There are always dudes with sticks coming at you in nearly every challenging game. You always got to try and find a way to get around the sticks. But yeah, for me, I'm curious. The only thing I can say about Horizon is that I've received the code for it. I can't say anything else. But overall, I am looking forward to seeing how the story shakes out in that, because I loved Zero Dawn. And I think that that's just one of the best IPs Sony have. So I'm curious how the rest of that stuff goes.
Yeah.
Elden Ring, I'm more just curious about. Like I said, I genuinely don't know if I have it in me to get through that game. I want to, but I just feel like it's gonna do a Sekiro, and I'm gonna hate it.
I'm going mad, man. I'm doing it on stream as well. So I have to deal with my emotions in front of other people because I'm just gonna be like, oh.
That's my thing. I could never stream a game like that because I would get too. I'd be punching the legs. I'd be getting too annoyed. I just wouldn't be able to do it. Or I'd get stuck somewhere, and everyone's watching me get stuck.
Team racing.
Exactly. Crash team racing. I'm never. And I maintain to this day that I didn't let you win that first race. But
you didn't.
I definitely hung back, being like, oh well, he's not going to go all out, is he? It's the first race. And then Jules
beat me on the first thing. And just, I don't even know what's happening.
Side track for that. Yes. I do hate the fact that people came in to roast you for it when it was totally unnecessary because of the fact that you then proceeded to mop the floor with me for the, like the next 20 races.
It didn't matter though, did it?
Because one race, I got one race under my belt.
One very nice little race. They made me a fake trophy as well. I had to, I had to swear at them to get them to leave the room. It was, I'm glad that was years ago, to be honest, but it's, it was,
I miss those days
time.
Of being able to stream in the same room as you.
I know, back in the day. We'll figure out some way to bring us together. Probably not for Elden Ring, though, because that game's going to be a game of hate.
I believe,
at least as far as I'm concerned. A final question from AJ, who says, UBP, UBP, UBP.
UBP.
Hope you're both doing well. What's some of your favorite Capcom games? I personally love Resident Evil Revelations 2, and I've been playing Lost Planet 3. What a callback to Lost Planet.
Now, Resident Evil Revelations 2 was It was not bad, actually. You can harp on it.
I mean, I like the fact that it was. It reminded me of like a saw, like a jigsaw setup, where you've got the island full of traps, and you've got the guy in your earpiece, and I thought that was cool.
Well, you get obviously to play as Big Barry Burton, which is always fun. but you do have to put up with the fact that the ending of the game kind of puts. I'm not going to ruin it because obviously, if they're listening to this and they haven't,
there's
an ending bit where it actually betrays one of the characters' like core tenants, and you're just like, okay, that's a weird way to end it. But at least it's better than Resident Evil 6. That's always good. best Capcom games out there. I am a huge fan of, I want to say Okami and God Hand, obviously. It's just has not aged well in terms of the stuff that some of its content, but man, is that game fun. I wish there was just more stuff going on like that.
That would be a one for the earlier question we had about a race. Imagine discovering God Hand again. Like, that was a hell of a, like, a rush.
It was a wild ride.
It was very, like, 2005, but, like, at the same time, like, just how fast that game is, the punch flurry, kicking a dude into the sun, that's pretty good. For me, Capcom's just Devil May Cry. I love DMC so much. I thought DMC 5 was stellar. I was gutted it didn't get nominated for Game of the Year. I feel like it should be talked about a lot more than it is. I would just encourage anybody listening who likes action games to go play Devil May Cry 5. It's flawless.
Should check out Onimusha as well. For people who have a sort of itch to scratch that the Resident Evil games just haven't maybe done in the last couple of years, go back to Onimusha 1, 2, 3 is an undersung masterpiece. I absolutely love 3 because of the time traveling aspect that's in it. It is tip top in the chip shop, mate. I love it.
Plus, like, Jean Reno's in it. And I forget the name of the dude that plays Samanosuke. But anyway, in they never did an Onimusha Trilogy HD re-release. They only re-released the first one.
Yeah,
which I still
don't know why.
I know.
It makes no sense.
Like, I bought the first one on Xbox and PS2 back in the day. Then I bought them again because I traded them in, bought them again. Then I got the HD one. But yeah, I wonder if they just can't get the rights to use Jean Reno or something in three, or maybe they can't get the guy that played Jubei Yagyu in two, but like, because he was like a well-known actor and whatever. But either way, the Onimusha series, that's a hell of a shout for one of the best things that Capcom ever put together, and made on the bones of the Resident Evil engine with a really cool hack and slash thing.
If you're interested in like old school platformers, check out Mickey Mouse Castle of Illusion as well. That is a banger. Actually, you know what? Capcom had a real run when they did the whole they did the Lion King,
right?
Which was bloody
difficult. Lion King's not.
They did Aladdin as well.
Yes. I don't mind Aladdin.
What else did they do? They must have done another one.
Was that Capcom? I thought that was like Sega. You know what they should
check out for Capcom games? Sunset Riders. You played that before?
Rings a bell. No, I don't think so.
You play as cowboys and you're in a kind of like techno Wild West and you're like shooting robots and it's like a side-scrolling shoot-em-up sort of thing with kind of like Contra. But then it'll have moments where it goes into first person and you move your little reticle around the screen and shoot that way. Uh-huh. Oh, I love that game, man. So good.
Capcom overall, they are being touted as the next acquisition by Sony, which I think would be a hell of a thing if Resident Evil becomes PlayStation exclusive. But I mean, yeah, they have a lot of I was going to mention the Monster Hunter games as well. I feel like they've
come into their own.
Recently, Monster Hunter World. I love what they're doing with the stories spin-offs as well. Just like the
is that Monster Hunter Rise? That what those
Rise ones? Is the Switch one, which is really good. And then Stories is their cell-shaded turn-based one where you.
Oh, I haven't played that.
You'd very, really like it. It's like it's like rock, paper, scissors style approach to combat. So it's always like red, blue, and green moves, and one thing beats the other one, and whatever else. And that's just really, really cool. But yeah, Capcom have a nice little legacy. It's a good time. Speaking of a good time, hopefully you've had one. It's been the Untitled Banter Podcast. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
The UBP, and we'll catch you next week. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.